Welcome to an episode of the Deeper Than No podcast with Brady Slack. I'm excited to have you, Brady. Welcome.
Thanks for having me on. I'm excited for the conversation. It's going to be a good one.
Yeah. And Brady, you and I connected maybe 3 years ago, maybe a little bit more.
Yeah.
You came out and did you come out to San Diego when I was doing the solar?
Yeah.
You presented then, right?
Yeah. We came and did a presentation for the solar org.
Yeah. So I will let you give your own background rather than me butchering it, but yeah, Brady, go ahead.
No, again, thank you. Yeah. So I'm Brady Slack. I'm managing partner of High Country Finance. We're a full service tax and advisory firm. And I'm also a co-founder in a software company called Stacked, making commission payments more simple for sales orgs. So,
And yeah, I wish that you had that because right before we pressed record, we were talking a little bit about it, but I was the one at the solar. Everything was done in a spreadsheet. And then you have to make sure that it was it's formulated correctly. And I mean, we'd have weekly payments going out of $40,000 sometimes, and you're like, I hope this is right.
Yeah. Well, it's like funny enough, it started because as you know, we help a lot of solar organizations with their accounting and their taxes. And they ended up pawning that off to us. And Mike, my partner, who's in my opinion very good at spreadsheets, had built these spreadsheets out as good as they could have been built. And we were still running into complications because of all of the overrides and percentages and red lines. And so finally we have a developer and he was like, you just need to have a database. And we were like, oh, business idea. So that's kind of how it started.
How long have you been running that for?
We started the company about 18 months ago, got our first clients about 7 or 8 months ago, and we've been pounding the pavement ever since. It's been fun to see the growth.
Awesome. And it's you and Mike are partners at High Country, and then you guys are also partners.
Yeah. And then we have two other co-founders in the software company as well.
Okay. I'm going to ask a few questions on that before we jump in. Okay. So I had an advisor. John Richards was our first advisor. He was great. And he said, I'm not going to be the advisor if you're still in solar. So I had to walk away from all of that, which looking back, I just checked last week for whatever reason, because give me a few hundred thousand shares and the shares were just under a buck. I just checked and they're at 0.2 cents, a fifth of a penny. So it was nothing to walk away from, but I thought I was walking away from a few hundred grand. It all turned out, but his advice was, you know, really dial in and stay focused. And now these go hand in hand, these two businesses. I guess my question is, how do you, and I also really like that Mike's your partner, both of them. I asked somebody else who has a ton of businesses and said, how do you manage it? Because when I was trying to do solar and I had my brother as my partner, and then I was trying to do Dirty Dough at the same time and I had partners over there, I felt like I was cheating on one partner, but focusing on the other because it wasn't equal. And this other guy said, you could do as many businesses as you want as long as you have that same, I guess, partnership structure, which it seems like you kind of do or mostly do, but you also have other partners. Have there been any conflicts about that? Like, hey, Brady, Mike, you guys are spending too much time on High Country Finance. We need you over at Slack. Or is it still too early on? Or hopefully it never happens.
Yeah. So no, Mike only works with a couple of our accounting clients. We built our business, our accounting firm, so that neither Mike nor myself have to be in the business full time. I really only take on a couple advisory clients, but Mike has almost entirely stepped out of the accounting firm and has stepped full time into Stacked, the software company. So like that, to your point, I don't know how we could manage it both at the same time. Like it would be very convoluted. And to your other point, it wasn't until Mike and one of our other partners in the software company stepped full time into the software company where we really started to experience growth. When we were all just kind of part time, you know, your energy goes where your focus goes. And so like our focus was split, so the energy was split. But once that energy was focused full time, the software companies just exploded in the last 3 or 4 months. So,
yeah, that's awesome. What were you doing before High Country Finance?
You know, all of my professional career has been in tax. I started in college at a family office in the Salt Lake Valley, and I started as an intern. Like I kind of got tripped and pushed into tax. I definitely didn't grow up thinking I'm going to be a tax advisor, you know, but yeah, I got tripped and pushed into it and I just kind of fell in love with it. I worked my way very quickly with that firm into an advisor role, at least a junior advisor role. And then some weird turn of events happened in 2020, right, when COVID was happening, that allowed me to step away from that firm and start High Country Finance. So we've been in operation for about 4 years now, and it's been a wild ride, but it's been fun.
Speak about the wild ride. I'm still in it. And every time I tell myself in 6 months, it's going to get better. Yeah. In 6 months, it does get better, but it also gets worse, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think that's just the development of things. Like, our business has evolved. We're doing multiple seven figures a year in just our accounting firm. And, you know, the more money you make doesn't equal less problems. It just equals different problems. And so I understand that totally.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Diving into the kind of the joy and fulfillment side. Well, maybe we'll just start with kind of success. What is success to you, and what are you after, whether it's, you know, through these businesses? Yeah, I mean, we'll start with these. What's kind of the vision, and what would success be like in these two businesses?
Yeah, I think my idea of success as far as it relates to our accounting firm has changed drastically over the last year and a half. When I started to go to, I'm a part of a couple accounting networking groups, and I'm by far one of the youngest people in those rooms. You know, most of those guys have been in the industry, guys and gals have been in the industry for 20, 30 years, you know? And I started to realize that we were doing more than other accounting firms. Most accounting firms stop growing at about $600,000 to $750,000 a year in revenue with 3 to 4 operators. And we were double, if not triple, than a lot of those. And so, like, I think a lot of people define success as like the amount of money in a bank account, or your ability to sell a business for X amount in a multiple, you know? And I've kind of realized that success for me is being able to keep a roof over my family's head, put food on the table, and create experiences for my family that we will be able to remember for the rest of our lives. Like that, like, and we do that. We go on at least 2 or 3 trips every year as a family. My brothers always, I've got 5 younger brothers, and they always joke that my kids have been more places in the world than they have, which is true. Like, we prioritize that. So that's like, that's success for me. So.
And how was it with your business partners and taking time off, and maybe if their definition is success is a little bit different, they're like, hey, Brady, my definition of success is having the most money in the bank account and you're off, you know,
yeah,
a few weeks off. Have you ran into any of that at either business? And if you haven't, why don't you think that's happened yet?
I think the reason that we have not, because we really haven't. Now, there have been times where maybe stress levels have been felt more than other times, which I think is normal just as you go through the ebbs and flows of growth in a business. But the reason why I don't think we have so much, at least now, I did have one business partner at one time where there was kind of that friction, if you will. And our alignment was just off. The goals that we had were not the same goals as the other partner. And so that is where that friction was created. But to your point, like, yeah, Mike's my partner in High Country Finance. Mike is my partner in Stack. And I could continue to be partners with Mike for forever because we get along really good. We understand each other. We have similar goals and similar visions for what we want to accomplish. We go about doing things in a little bit different, but I think that's what makes us so good with each other. And so having partners that align with what you're trying to do, your visions, your core values, help so that friction doesn't exist. And then the other thing is just being open. Like, it's amazing to me how many people lack confident communication skills to just say, hey, here's how I'm feeling. Here's a problem. Can we address this? And not having that constant open line of communication.
I like that a lot. So it really boils down to having that communication right at the front. And you also mentioned core values. That's something that, yeah, this business, I mean, me and my brother never sat down when we started it. I'm like, hey, what do we want out of this? What is success? What are the core values? What is the mission? All of that. We just went for it. And yeah, maybe we're brothers and and we get along good, that we didn't run into that. But I've heard that that's one of the, you know, the big things that tear businesses apart is, hey, we're at $1 million and I'm happy. And the other person's wanting it to 10 million or what is, and they haven't really
defined
that. For me, the kind of this second time around with Dirty Dough, that's been all the difference. And it was starting with the mission statement. And it wasn't starting with a company mission statement. It was starting with me, Bennett's.
Me. Yeah, personal.
The company be able to fulfill that. So
yeah.
When you grew High Country Finance, did you guys take an investment? Did you guys bootstrap it? Was there, I'm kind of going a little bit off topic, but I just want to, after 3 years of Dirty Dough, of just like, okay, we're still not profitable, this and that, and the stress level. I want to compare that with what you did at High Country Finance and ask a few questions about it.
This is, so when I left the accounting firm that I was working at before, I left because there was a strategic partnership with an individual that I could create. They had some financial services that they offered, some investment courses, and they needed to tack on a tax accountant to provide some of their seminars or trainings or whatnot for this course and these education seminars that they were doing. So it was kind of a seamless partnership. And they did invest. They got equity and they put in, I think it was like, when all said and done, they only put in like $32,000. But when I started High Country Finance, it was kind of a perfect timing because the government extended the tax filing deadlines in 2021, in 2020 for the 2019 tax season. And so even though I started my business at the end of March, I had until September and October to file tax returns. So I just busted my butt to get as many tax returns through the door. And I knew exactly how much I needed to make to live on and cover our expenses. So that was my target every month. And then slowly but surely, we started to add on different services and became more and more profitable. I'll give you the insight on the software company. The software company has been, this has been a learning curve for me. Software is a different beast. But even in our software company, it's all owner funded up to this point. And we are cash flow positive, which is really unique in the software industry. And that was a goal that we had set because like you had Silicon Valley Bank that failed and all of these other tech companies that were really struggling with massive layoffs. And the reason was because none of them were cash flow positive, but money was so cheap that you had capital and infused money going into these software companies. And so one of our goals early on was if we can be cash flow positive and our product is superior to other products in our industries, then we can obtain a higher multiple when we want to go sell or when we want to try and bring on capital to grow. So that was kind of side by side with both of those businesses, what we've tried to obtain.
That's awesome. And I imagine, well, one, congrats on that. I mean,
no, thanks.
Company, you've had clients for 7-8 months and yours are cash flow positive. That's a huge,
it's a beast. Yeah.
So that's awesome. And I imagine that, kind of looking at that, well, you know, go raise capital and the rapid growth, but man, that's just me being in it for so long. I'm like, this is not what I thought I signed up for.
Yeah.
Know? It's a way more than I signed up for. And I, looking back, I'm like, man, if I could wave a magic wand, I'd be like, yeah, it would have been way better to grow slower rather than just go a million miles an hour and figure it out.
Like that's kind of the pro and the con here is like we could have taken on capital or debt in the software company and grown exponentially quicker, but I think it would have forced us into a couple avenues that I don't know we would have been happy with. We would have been, and again, the like pro and con, everyone gets to figure this out, but then we would have been subject to a creditor or investors and what they wanted to do with the company that might have been different than our vision, because now we're forced to scale at a certain rate and exit at a certain multiple within a certain time frame. And so yes, have we grown slower than I think we would like? Absolutely. But we've done it how we've wanted to do it. So
yeah. And that's so big that you have that freedom, especially if the economy's tightening up, you have options.
Yeah.
If you're cash flow negative, you don't have as many options because you're like, no, I need the money, you know, we need to figure this out. And anyways, I'm glad that you guys are doing that. Maybe I'll try that one day and
Tell me how it goes.
Because I'm thinking that is definitely the way to go. So what are the things, whether it's inside or outside of the business, what brings you the most joy and fulfillment in your life?
I'll give you both. Inside the businesses, like for me, I'm in business so that I can help other people. And I know that sounds cliche, but like I really love the transformation that our business has taken over the last year and a half. And maybe you even saw a little bit of this, but me and Mike being able to step away and seeing others in our organization take key roles and take responsibilities over so that we didn't have to do it. That for me is fun because I get to see their development. I get to see their successes and I get to celebrate those with them. And then obviously with our clients, like I love when a client comes and we've sat down and we've said, hey, like, I can't believe how much money you were able to save because you implemented two or three things that we talked about last year. And then they're excited and they want to continue to work together, you know? Outside the business, the thing that brings me the greatest amount of joy is my family. Even though like right now my 3-year-old's in this weird tantrum crying phase and it's kicking my butt, he's still like my boys and my wife are some of my greatest joys. It's so fun to hang out with them, see them smile, have experiences with them. Like that's what brings me joy.
I'm with you on that. Is there anything that you mentioned taking a few trips. Is there anything else you do, whether it's like whether it's 2 trips or 3 trips, like I want to be, you know, off work for X amount of weeks, or I don't work past, you know, I don't work the weekends or past this time. Are there any like hard parameters that you had to set in order to really prioritize it? And the reason I'm asking it, the first time I tried to do that, solar company, I never set those hard parameters. I'm just like, my family's important, but I didn't set those.
Yeah.
And I never did it. And then I set them and I still fell short. But the second time when I set them and I was very open, it really came down to communication with my spouse. And I gave her permission, hey, when I'm working past 5, no matter what, if you ask me to stop, I'm going to stop. Weekends, no matter what, if you ask me to stop, I'm going to stop. And that's been worked extremely well. Yeah. I did have to ask for help because I'm such a, I don't know, you get in the groove, you know, and you're just like, man, I'm going.
Yeah. My workout time is my time in the morning, 6 days a week, 5 o'clock, 5:30, you'll see me in the gym, you know, for about an hour. That's kind of my time. And I try not to pick up the phone and do any work until about 8 o'clock, you know, and I try to give my family that first 30, 45 minutes of the day before I head out for work. I can definitely be better, but I try and put my phone up for about half an hour every day when I get home. No phone calls, text, social media, nothing, just undivided attention. And what I, in fact, Ed Milet kind of talked about this one time in a group that I was a part of, but he said, after 30 minutes, they don't care about you. They just want to see you for 30 minutes and then they're back to doing whatever they were doing. So I try and do that. I could be better. Sundays is a day that I don't do any work. I don't pick up the phone. We might have like a partner tech, like we've got a group text for both of our companies and an issue might come up. They might want to notify us about something. And if it's urgent, I'll send a quick text, say, hey, received it. I'll let you know tomorrow. But other than that, no communication. And then I actually, one thing that I did is I switched my phone number. So sorry to anyone who might get offended about this, who hears this, that is a client, but if you're texting me thinking it's me, it's not me. It's my admin. And I don't even take client phone calls anymore. It all goes straight to my office just so that I don't have to deal with them.
Yeah, that's great. And how many people have died because you didn't respond to them?
Honestly? Yeah, none. I mean, it's so far that I'm aware of.
Yeah, people, I started doing that in solar because there's a feature on the iPhone. It's just reject every unknown number.
Yeah.
And then it was, okay, well, they can leave me voice messages. And then I called Verizon. I said, remove my voice message. I don't want people leaving voice. If they want to get a hold of me, text me. And if they can't text me, they don't need to get a hold of me anyway. And people are like, that's crazy. What if you miss out on a sale? And again, this is solar pest control. I was like,
I'm not really worried about it.
Asking me to buy. If they're calling me to complain, and that can always, always, always wait. Like there's always something, even if it's, you know, an investor, like I've learned that it sounds like your experience has been the same. We make it such a big deal when it's not. Like somebody texts you at Friday at 5:01. I'm going to text them back Monday. And guess what? Nothing has ever happened. I've been doing it for freaking years. And anyways, I like that you've been doing
even,
that.
Even to my admin, we had an issue last Friday with a client. And this was like Friday at 2 or 3. And I'd already left the office. I had a shorter day on Friday. And my admin texted me the conversation that this client had sent her. And it was Friday at about 2:30. And she asked me, she's like, do I need to respond? I said, no, it's Friday at 3 o'clock. Go home. We'll worry about it on Monday. And we did. And it's been just fine so far. So, and if they're not happy, they can go find someone else to work with. And that, like, that might be a poor attitude, but I don't want to work with someone that's like that. So
back down to the definition of success. And you'd already said the definition of success is not getting as many clients as much as revenue. So, and anybody who that definition of success is that, and a lot of people start that way. You kind of bend over backwards and then you get sick of it and you're like, it's not worth it because that's not what I'm after. But my belief is most people don't ever take the time to be like, well, what do I actually want?
Yep.
It's just, I want money, but then we don't define why we want the money, what that means to us, how it's going to make us feel, the status symbol, whatever. It's just, I want money because I think it's going to make me feel good. And we kind of get lazy and we don't go all the way to the end of I want money to buy a new car because I want to feel better because I don't feel better about myself because I have low self-esteem. And it's like, we'll focus on that then. But you have to identify that. So,
yeah.
That also, I was going to ask about you handing off kind of the reins to the employees and empowering them. What advice do you have to business owners that haven't done that yet? How do you do that correctly so they feel empowered, whether that's performance metrics, you know, equity subject to vesting, that employee, you know, that stock option pool. Do you have any advice to be able to really empower those employees? I mean, one thing you just said, like your admin, if she's like, do I need to respond? And you tell her no, I guarantee she liked that. You know, she's like, oh, cool.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have to wait till Friday. I also get to take the weekend off.
Yeah. I think, well, and I'm kind of like you. I'm a workaholic. I love to see the growth. And I say success is putting a roof over my head. Like, don't get me wrong. I like to see extra zeros in my bank account too. You know, like that is important. Right. But what kind of flipped the switch for me was I had a mentor probably about 18 months ago kind of look me in the eye and ask me what is my goal specifically about our accounting firm. And I said, well, I like long term, this is kind of like an annuity. I'll be able to take distributions from it. It'll pay me long term. And what I can do with those distributions is go invest into other things. And they kind of smacked me around a little bit and was like, well, if you're already just going to go do other things, why not just go do other things? You really need to set your business up to be able to sell. And I hadn't really ever thought of that. And I couldn't because I was so involved in the business. Everything was tied to the name Brady and my face was the image of everything. And so I switched everything. I changed our entire website. I took all of my pictures off. We still do a little bit of advertising where I'm the one that, you know, is in the images and whatnot on our ads. But again, like no one comes through me. That even if it's a new lead, they don't meet Brady Slack. They meet our client manager of client success and then our onboarding team and then an accounting manager and a tax advisor. So, I guess the question would be, what do you want out of your business? And if you never want to leave your business, then don't ever get out of your business. But if you want to be able to sell your business, maybe have some more time freedom, then the only thing you can do is hand over some of those reins. And there's a lot of different ways to be able to do that. Yeah, you maybe give up a little bit of equity to someone. That happened in our business. There was individuals who took over key roles and we did give them equity, you know, non-voting equity, but they were able to receive distributions or et cetera, et cetera. Maybe you increase their pay because they're taking on more roles. You know, in the right business, like talk about our software company, we're to the point now where we are hiring key individuals to replace maybe a CTO or take over as a VP of sales or different things like that. And yeah, there is equity that we have set aside in our business to be able to give them options so that as they help the business grow and as they stay with the business as it grows for a potential exit, they get a piece of the pie. Because really at the end of the day, people, this sounds bad, but people want money and they want to feel like they're making a difference. And if they feel like they're making a difference and they're going to get compensated for that, they'll stay with you as long as they can.
Yeah. I'm very big on the sharing the equity side. And most people say protect your equity, you know, it's going to be worth so much in so many years and this and that. And going back to that same advisor I'd mentioned, he said, well, if your business succeeds, you know, and we open up 450 franchises, it's worth a lot of money. You know, mm-hmm. it's worth a few hundred million dollars. And whether you own 80%, 60%, 40%, it doesn't matter. Your lifestyle doesn't change.
Nope.
And then he said, and if it fails, it also doesn't matter if you own 60% or 80%.
That's true.
This is advice for me. And then after that, we not only like bringing on advisors and giving them equity, and then there's also obviously ways to protect yourself that you bring on somebody, you don't just hand them equity and they suck. He's subject to divesting. So if they leave within, yep. typically for employees, you go 1 year cliff. If they leave within a year or they're fired within a year, they don't get anything. And advisors, it was every 6 months. And I actually had two advisors that we gave equity to. And within a few months, it was clear that it wasn't working out. So we took the equity back and let them go as advisors. And, you know, nothing was lost. Yep. So anyways, I'm a big proponent on sharing the upside, because I do feel like people want exactly what you said. I mean, they want to get paid, but they want to feel important that they're making a difference. Yeah. And it seems like they feel better about themselves. Maybe yeah. I'm turning myself in their shoes. If I'm your employee and you give me equity, we're partners now, even if it's yeah. 0.5%.
And it's like responsibility. Now I have a little bit of that weight on my shoulders, and I gotta increase my performance. So one thing I always say is I'd rather have 10% of a watermelon than 100% of a grape.
Yeah.
That's the mentality I have.
True. Whether it's, you know, doing the startup phases of these businesses, or maybe before you started these businesses and you were working for somebody else, but talk about, if you're comfortable with it, like a difficult time in your life on the mental health side, that whether, I don't know, overwhelming stress, anxiety, depression, you're just in a dip. Is there anything that you can share with us? And then also, kind of what it was and what you did to overcome that.
This is kind of a harder conversation for me, only because I don't struggle with anxiety or depression. That's never been something that I have struggled with. I have, you know, brothers who have been diagnosed with anxiety. I have family members who have been diagnosed with anxiety and depression, and I just have never struggled with that. So for what it's worth, I don't know how good my viewpoint will be in this conversation, because I've never had that overwhelming feeling of depression or that overwhelming feeling that I lack something that someone else has. I have been stressed before. I have been...
Thought you were a weirdo if you've never been stressed.
No, I have, you know, I've, you know, another side to my story that would take up an entire different podcast is I've been through addiction recovery twice, you know, for problems that I've had to deal with and that I continue to kind of overcome on a daily basis. But like, I can think of times when I was going through that and just wondering, who am I? What can I really overcome this? Or am I just going to be this loser for the rest of my life, you know, and trying to reach for anything and everything that I could to make me feel better and overcome what I was dealing with at that time. I remember during the time frame when I was going to start High Country Finance, at the other place that I was working at, there was a time period where it was really rough, and it kind of forced me to get out of that situation and into High Country Finance. And I can think of lots of times while we've been growing High Country Finance, and whether it's due to financial stress or spousal stress because I'm working so much, or, you know, tax season's a heavy time and it does take a lot of time. When I was full-time in the business, I was working, you know, Monday through Friday from 7 to about 8, and then again at 10 to 12, and Saturdays from 10 to 4, you know, like I can think of those times where I was like, it was just stressful, you know? But this is where, again, my point of view doesn't carry a lot of weight for those who do struggle with anxiety and depression.
Right. I mean, speak to the addiction or speak to the stress. It doesn't even be that anxiety or depression.
No, I think for me, it came down to a choice. I had a choice to be in that situation, and I had a choice to feel like that. Or I had a choice to put myself in a different situation, do things differently, and doing things differently is what helped me in those situations overcome those feelings or that stress that I had.
And you talked about 18 months ago, I think, was it advice that you got from a business coach?
Yeah, a mentor, yeah.
or mentor. I guess talk to me a little bit about that. I mean, because that's a way to change, right? Not just trying to change internally, but also like, hey, I need some support. I need advice. I need help. I need a mentor. How did you go about finding a mentor and kind of what is that relationship like?
Yeah, the relationships have kind of evolved for me over the last 2 or 3 years. And I guess I grew up playing very competitive sports. I played soccer at a very high competitive level, national, international tournaments. I played football, was going to go play in college. And so I always knew that there was a value in having someone who has walked where you've walked, who has been where you want to go, and having them give you insight on how to get there, right? And so when that translated over to business, which for me is also kind of a game, it's competitive, I'm competitive, it fills that void, if you will, from sports. But I always knew if I want to get to a different level, I can get there quicker if I hire someone or work with someone who's been there. I can make far less mistakes and it will cost me a lot less money along the way, right? And so that's kind of why I've worked with different individuals. Now, when I started my business, I worked with one individual who I found out really quick was not a great fit. They hadn't been where I wanted to go. They weren't teaching me good business principles, and I outgrew them very quick. And that's kind of forced me to really be cognizant of who I'm working with, making sure that the areas of their lives supersede where I am to help me get to where I want to be.
Not taking in fitness advice from an overweight person or.
Yeah.
I was a doctor when I lived in California, and I swear to you, when I was big, I was 300 pounds. She was bigger than me. And she was, I'm like, you're not going to tell me how to lose weight, lady. Yeah. Not to be rude, but I don't know how, and you don't. Neither.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah. Well, no, but it's true.
It is. It's like, well, even if they're giving solid advice, because, you know, it's like, oh, well, this dude was the coach of Michael Jordan and he wasn't a professional basketball, this and that. But it's just harder to trust if they haven't kind of been there, done that. So anyways, the mentorship has been super important. I think a lot of people bypass that. I don't know. I see a lot of people that are just scared to ask the questions or ask for help. Just like, you ask your mentor for help and they're asking other people for help. Like that's what we all do.
Yeah. You know? Well, and I'd be worried if my mentor didn't have a mentor, because it's just kind of that level game of, well, where are they trying to go and who are they working with? And that's where I want to go eventually. So.
Yeah. Man, I'm going to have to cut this because I had a really good question anyways, whatever, cut this. I'm already kind of a little bit over. No, I need to think of this. Never mind. Brady, I'm sorry, dude. Having a brain fart, but it was going to be a good question. I was like, I'm going to write this down so I don't forget it, but I didn't. Anyways, I appreciate you sharing that on the mentors. Definitely recommend everybody go out and find a mentor. Here's my question. If you had all the money in the world, what would you be doing?
This is a great question, and it's one that I've been faced with recently because of the pathway that our software's taken. Like, it is super realistic that within the next 48 to 60 months, you could sell the software company for a really large multiple, right? If everything goes well, and I think we're on path to do so. And so, yeah, like me and my wife have had to sit down and say, okay, great, if we get $30 million deposited into our bank account tomorrow, what do we want to do with that? What are we going to do? And I can't, like, there are people our age who quote unquote claim themselves as retired. And I can't live that life. I've got to be working. I like to work. I like to work with my hands. I like to do things. And so if I had all the money in the world, I really don't think I'd be doing anything else other than what I'm doing. I'd still probably work. I really like to engage with other people like you and other people in our groups and, you know, other business owners and entrepreneurs. I'd still like to invest. I still like to have my hands in things. I still like to connect, to go to church on Sundays. We'd still go on family vacations. I guess at that point, there would just be a couple extra zeros in the bank account and we'd have quite a few more assets, you know, but other than like, I don't think anything would really change. I wear $5 shirts now. I probably would still wear $5 shirts. Right now I'm wearing Wranglers and jeans, and I would still probably wear Wranglers and jeans. You know, that's just kind of who I am. So.
And honestly, that's the perfect answer. And I don't know if I've asked anybody else on the podcast, but I have outside of the podcast of, you know, when you're talking about mission statements and goals and where you want to be, and then it's, well, what is the perfect life and how can you incorporate that into your day to day? And you just answered that you are. And I think that's such a strong answer, and also speaks to, well, I don't have anxiety, I don't have depression, I'm doing what I love. And I agree with you that, you know, people are our age, or even 50, I don't know, 55. Most people don't want to retire, they want to do something. But if you're doing it because you love it rather than because you have to, regardless if you have to or not, if you're saying, even if I didn't have to, I'm going to be working in this business, helping people, empowering employees, I think that is the way to live that the happiest, most joyful, most fulfilled life with the least amount of suffering. Figure out what you want to do if you're retired, and then incorporate that into your daily life.
Probably drive a nicer truck, a newer truck, probably have a couple more horses in the pasture. I would definitely go on a couple more hunting trips a year, but I mean, everything else is, we're already doing it, you know?
I mean, I just asked a buddy this, and he's, you know, super busy, owns a few dental practices, and like, you know, and this came up, and he said, well, I would, because he has a boat, and he goes, I would be giving wakeboarding lessons. And I was like, why don't you just do that right now? Like, why don't you just, if that's like your dream thing,
do it.
Like, just do it every Saturday, dude. Do it every Sunday. And a lot of times, like, man, I love fishing. It's like, well, what's stopping you from going fishing literally every day? Like, 6 o'clock hits, 5 o'clock hits, grab some of your kids, go fishing. So anyways, I really like that answer. Last question as we wrap up is, what is the legacy you want to leave behind?
My wife and I were at a couples mastermind retreat in January, and this question was asked, you know, what do you want someone to say about you at your funeral? And when I started High Country Finance, my grandpa told me a quote that has always kind of stuck with me. It's kind of become one of my core values. And the quote goes as saying, nobody cares about what you know until they know how much you care. You know, when I die, legacy, whatever that means, I want people to know that I cared about them. You know, not everything went okay. I'm not perfect, you know, but I did my best. I cared about them, and that we had fun doing it. Like that to me is important. If I can help people know that I care about them, and we can get somewhere with that, then my life will have been a success.
I love that. And I also love that you joined a mastermind and you've already thought about this. And you probably already thought about that because you invested in your time and money.
Yeah.
And with your spouse and brought her into it, that the answer just rolled off your tongue. You're like, oh, I already answered this because somebody else pushed you to think through that. So that's awesome. How can guests and listeners connect with you, Brady?
Yeah, easiest way is Instagram. My handle is at the Brady Slack. I've got a link in my bio. You can follow me for some of my content. Links to schedule consultations or meet up. Happy to help.
Okay, Brady, I appreciate your time. Thanks for sharing your wisdom with us.
Thanks, Bennett. I appreciate it.